Hey everyone, and welcome back. We're diving deep into nanofiltration today. It's a technology that could totally change how we think about chemical separations and make things way greener in the future.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen your notes about how much sustainability matters to you, so this deep dive is going to be right up your alley.
It's a super exciting area of research for sure. And the paper we're looking at today really shows just how powerful it can be. It's called A Hybrid Modeling Approach to Compare Chemical Separation Technologies in Terms of Energy Consumption and Carbon Dioxide Emissions from Nature Energy.
Okay, so before we jump in, let's start with the basics. What exactly is nanofiltration and why should we be so excited about it?
Well, imagine a filter. But this filter is so incredibly fine that it can actually separate molecules based on how big they are and even what they're made of. That's basically what nanofiltration does. It's like a super selective bouncer at a molecular club.
I love that analogy. So it's like a super selective bouncer at a molecular club.
Exactly. And what makes nanofiltration so cool for industries is that it's super energy efficient, unlike old school separation methods that use a lot of heat and evaporation. Nanofiltration uses pressure to do the work, so it uses less energy and produces fewer emissions.
Sounds like a win for the environment and for businesses, too. But if it's so great, why isn't it being used everywhere?
That's a great question, and the researchers tackle this head-on in the paper. The thing is, the world of chemistry is massive. Countless combinations of solvents, solutes, and membranes. Finding the right setup for each specific separation used to be a long and tedious process of trial and error in the lab.
So like looking for a needle in a haystack, but the haystack is made of molecules.
Precisely. That's where this research takes a really fascinating turn. They realized that data science and machine learning could be game changers for discovering and optimizing nanofiltration processes.
Okay, now we're talking. I love it when different areas of science come together to solve problems. So how did they actually use data in machine learning?
They created this huge collection of nanofiltration data called the NF10K dataset. Think of it like a library of how different membranes perform under different conditions. And they use this dataset to train a machine learning model, specifically a graph neural network, or GNN, to predict how well nanofiltration will work for specific separations.
So instead of tons of experiments in the lab, they built a virtual lab powered by AI.
Exactly. This GNN can analyze millions of potential combinations in seconds, helping researchers find the most promising setups without all the trial and error.
Now that's working smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
But how does this new approach actually stack up against the old methods? Did they find any major advantages?
They did. They compared nanofiltration to evaporation and extraction, two commonly used separation techniques, and in a lot of cases. They found that nanofiltration could reduce energy consumption and CO2 emissions by an average of 40%.
That's a big improvement, but I imagine it depends on what you're trying to do, right?
You're right. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. They looked at two main scenarios where chemical separations are used a lot. The first is concentrating solutions, basically removing solvent to make the substance you want more concentrated.
Like making maple syrup. You boil off the water to get that concentrated sugary goodness.
Perfect analogy. And for concentrating solutions, they found that nanofiltration was particularly efficient for certain solvents like water and DMF.
Hold on. DMF. What's DMF?
Oh, yeah. Good point. DMF stands for dimethylformamide. It's a common solvent in lots of industries, pharmaceuticals, chemical manufacturing, you name it. And nanofiltration works really well with DMF, especially when you need a high degree of separation, what we call high solute rejection.
So high solute rejection means the membrane is good at blocking the stuff you don't want and letting the good stuff through.
Exactly. And in these cases, nanofiltration can be a much greener option compared to evaporation.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've covered concentrating solutions. What was that other scenario they looked at?
The second scenario is separating different solutes from a mixture, like sorting different types of beans from a mixed bag.
So instead of concentrating one thing, you're trying to separate multiple things from each other.
Precisely. And in this case, nanofiltration actually outperformed extraction in certain situations, leading to energy savings and higher purity levels.
So it seems like nanofiltration has the potential to really shake things up.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be honest, I'm a little skeptical. If it's this promising, why haven't we seen it used more widely already?
Oh. Well, historically, nanofiltration has been seen as a bit of a niche technology, often used for very specific applications. But this research suggests it's time to rethink that. What they've shown is that nanofiltration isn't just a specialized tool. It's got broad potential across a range of industrial processes, with the power to make them significantly greener.
So we're talking about a whole new way of thinking about chemical separations.
Exactly. And a key part of that shift is moving away from the old focus on maximizing solute rejection, which means just trying to block as much as possible and instead focusing on maximizing the separation factor.
You've mentioned separation factor a couple of times now. Mm-hmm. What exactly does that mean, and why is it so important?
It's a way to measure how well the membrane can tell the difference between the product you want and the impurities you don't. It's about being more selective, not just blocking everything.
So it's like having a customized filter for each specific need.
That's a great way to put it. And this shift in focus could lead to even more specialized and efficient membranes designed for specific separation challenges.
This is all incredibly fascinating. But I'm a very practical person. I want to know, is this just theory? Or are there actual examples of nanofiltration making a difference out there in the real world?
That's where the paper gets really exciting. They dive into several case studies that show how nanofiltration is already being used in different industries, from pharmaceuticals to material science.
Okay, let's hear about these real-world applications. I'm eager to see how nanofiltration is actually being used to make a difference.
One of the coolest examples is something called nanostar sieving. It's used to purify peptides.
Nanostar sieving. Now that sounds like something straight out of Star Trek.
It does have a certain futuristic ring to it, but it's a really clever technique. They synthesize peptides, which are basically building blocks for proteins, on a central hub molecule.
So they're building these peptides, like they're constructing a tiny molecular spaceship.
You could say that. Okay. And because of this special way they're built, the peptides form these star-shaped structures called nanostars. Then they use nanofiltration to separate these nanostars from any impurities, and they end up with highly purified peptides.
So the nanofiltration membrane is like a quality control checkpoint, making sure only the properly assembled nanostars make it through.
Exactly. And this is important because these purified peptides are used in all sorts of things, from medicines to new materials.
That's amazing. It sounds like nanofiltration is playing a key role in creating these high-tech molecular building blocks. But I'm also interested in applications that might be a bit closer to home. Are there any examples of nanofiltration being used to produce things that we use in our everyday lives?
Absolutely. One they focus on in the paper is the production of apixaban. It's a common blood thinner.
Oh, wow. Apixaban. I've actually heard of that one. So how does nanofiltration fit into making this medication?
So in the traditional manufacturing process, there's this one step that uses distillation. And distillation is a very energy-intensive way to separate liquids.
So they basically swapped out that energy-guzzling step and used nanofiltration instead.
Exactly. And the results are amazing. They found that using nanofiltration for this step could cut energy use by a massive 95%.
95%? That's incredible. It's almost like eliminating the energy use completely. That kind of saving could have a huge impact. Especially if they can do it for other medications, too.
You're absolutely right. And the researchers point out, it's not just about energy savings. Because nanofiltration works at lower temperatures, it can also reduce the degradation of sensitive compounds, which means higher yields and less waste.
So it's a win-win all around. Saving energy, reducing waste, and potentially lowering production costs.
Precisely. This apixaban case study really shows how nanofiltration can be a game changer for making medicines, more sustainable and more cost-effective.
It really highlights how much of an impact this tech can have in the real world. I remember you mentioned they also looked at metoprolol, another common medication. Did nanofiltration look promising there too?
Yeah, it did. Metoprolol is a beta blocker, used to treat high blood pressure and some other heart conditions. The energy savings weren't quite as big as with apixaban, but they still found that using nanofiltration in the last step of making metoprolol could reduce energy consumption by 61%.
Okay, maybe not as dramatic, but still a very significant improvement. Seems like nanofiltration has the potential to make a real difference for a lot of pharmaceutical processes. But you mentioned earlier that they use their machine learning model for more than just predicting how well nanofiltration works. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Of course. They actually took it a step further and used their model to do what they call a high-throughput virtual screening. Imagine like a super fast AI-powered search through tons and tons of data.
Okay, I'm picturing a futuristic control room with screens flashing all sorts of data. What were they looking for in this mountain of data?
They were trying to find new and promising areas where nanofiltration could be used to improve existing industrial processes. They did this by estimating the rejection values for over 7 million different combinations of solutes and membranes.
Wow, 7 million. They weren't messing around. So basically, they were testing how well different membranes could filter out specific substances in a huge range of scenarios.
Precisely. And what they found was really encouraging. They discovered that about 59% of the solutes they tested could be effectively concentrated using nanofiltration.
So more than half of the substances they looked at could potentially benefit from this technology. That's huge.
It is. And if you look at specific membrane and solvent pairings, that number jumps up even higher, reaching 86% in some cases. It really shows the massive potential of nanofiltration across all sorts of industries.
I'm starting to see just how transformative this technology could be. But I remember you mentioned earlier that solubility, or how much of something can dissolve in a solvent, could be a limiting factor for nanofiltration. Did they account for that in their virtual screening?
Yes, they did. They calculated the solubility limits. For over a million solute solvent pairs, what they found was that over 42% of the solutes still had good rejection values, even at a pretty high solubility of 10 grams per liter. And even at a solubility of 100 grams per liter, almost 28% of the solutes were still good candidates for nanofiltration.
Okay, so even when you consider solubility, a good chunk of the substances they tested could still benefit from nanofiltration. But did they find any patterns or trends in the data that could help guide future research?
They did. One interesting thing they found was that different types of substances had different solubility and rejection patterns. For example, they found that a higher percentage of pharmaceuticals could be separated using nanofiltration compared to certain types of impurities.
Why is that? Is it because of the size of the molecules?
Size definitely plays a role. But it's also about their shape and their chemical properties and how they interact with the membrane. This difference in rejection patterns between products and impurities is actually a good thing for a lot of applications.
I'm curious, why would that be a good thing?
Because it means that nanofiltration can be used to really effectively purify products by removing very specific types of impurities. It's like having a custom design filter that's made to trap the unwanted stuff and let the good stuff through.
That's amazing. It's like having a molecular bouncer who not only checks IDs, but also knows the guest list inside and out.
Exactly. And one area where this targeted purification could be super valuable is in removing genotoxic impurities.
Genotoxic impurities. I'm not familiar with that term. Can you explain what that means and why it's important?
Sure. Genotoxic impurities are basically substances that can damage DNA, which can lead to mutations and even cancer. So you can see why getting rid of these impurities is a top priority, especially in things like pharmaceuticals and food production.
Absolutely. That makes sense. So how effective is nanofiltration at removing these harmful impurities?
They found that in about 65% of the cases they looked at, nanofiltration could increase the relative purity of a product by at least twofold.
Twofold. That's a big improvement. And I imagine that kind of purity boost could be a game changer for a lot of industries.
Definitely. And in some cases, they even saw a tenfold or even a 50-fold increase in relative purity, which shows the incredible potential of nanofiltration for improving product quality and safety.
Okay, so we've got energy savings, emissions reductions, and now improvements in product purity. Nanofiltration is sounding more and more like a triple threat. But were there any limitations or challenges that the researchers found with the current nanofiltration technology?
There were a few areas where they saw room for improvement. One was the design of the membranes themselves. They pointed out that current membrane designs often focus on maximizing the rejection of individual solutes, basically trying to make membranes that are really good at blocking specific substances.
Which seems like a logical approach, right? Yeah. If you want to filter something out, you want a membrane that can do that effectively.
Right. But the researchers think that might be too narrow of a focus. They suggest that future research should shift towards maximizing the separation factor, that measure of how well a membrane can tell different substances apart.
Ah, so it's not just about blocking everything, but about being more selective and intelligent about what gets through.
Exactly. It's like upgrading from a simple on-off switch to a sophisticated control panel that lets you fine-tune the separation process. This shift in focus could lead to even more specialized membranes tailored for specific separation challenges.
That makes a lot of sense. Instead of a one-size-fits-all approach, you're moving towards more customized solutions. But did they give any specific examples of how this shift in focus could lead to real-world improvements.
They did. They looked at three specific case studies that highlight the potential of nanofiltration in real-world applications. One of these, as we talked about earlier, involved the nanostar sieving process for purifying peptides.
Right, the molecular spaceships. So how do they apply this new approach to the nanostar sieving process?
Well, they use their machine learning model to design new and improved nanostar structures. By making small changes to the structure of the nanostars, they were able to significantly increase their rejection values.
So they were basically using AI to fine-tune the molecular spaceships to make them work better with nanofiltration.
Exactly. It's a really cool example of how computational tools can be used to optimize molecular design. And they got some impressive results. They were able to increase the rejection selectivity, which basically measures how well the nanostars are separated from impurities, by up to 810 times.
810 times. That's unbelievable. It sounds like they unlocked a whole new level of precision and efficiency. But what about the other case studies? Did those also focus on optimizing existing processes, or did they explore new applications?
The other two focused on making pharmaceuticals. Specifically, apixaban, the blood thinner we talked about, and metoprolol, the beta blocker.
Oh, interesting. So they were looking at ways to improve the manufacturing of these common medications.
Yeah.
Using nanofiltration.
Exactly. In both cases, there are steps in the traditional manufacturing process that use energy-intensive separation techniques. And they wanted to see if nanofiltration could be a more efficient and sustainable option.
I'm sensing a theme here. So what did they find? Was nanofiltration able to live up to the hype in these real-world pharmaceutical applications?
For apixaban, the results were amazing. They found that replacing the traditional distillation step with nanofiltration could reduce energy consumption by a whopping 95%.
95%. We're talking about practically eliminating the energy use for that step. That's incredible.
It is. It really shows the potential of nanofiltration to transform the pharmaceutical industry. Cleaner, more sustainable, and potentially even more cost-effective production of essential medicines.
It's amazing to see how this seemingly simple technology can have such a big impact on something as complex as drug manufacturing. But did they see similar results with metoprolol?
The results for metoprolol were good too, though not quite as dramatic as with apixaban. They estimated that using nanofiltration in the last stage of making metoprolol could reduce energy consumption by 61%.
61% is still a big improvement. It seems like nanofiltration is a strong contender to replace traditional separation methods, especially when you think about the environmental benefits. But did the researchers mention anything specific that could affect how well nanofiltration works in different settings?
They did. One thing they pointed out was the source of electricity used to power the nanofiltration process. They said that in places where electricity comes mostly from renewable sources, like solar or wind power, the environmental benefits of nanofiltration would be even greater.
Oh, that makes sense. If you're using clean energy to power the process, you're basically creating a closed loop of sustainability. It's a great example of how different sustainable technologies can work together to have an even bigger positive impact.
Exactly. It shows how important it is to think about the entire life cycle of a product or process when you're trying to figure out its environmental impact.
It's all about connecting the dots and looking at the big picture. This has been a really eye-opening deep dive into the world of nanofiltration. We've covered a lot of ground, from the basics to real-world applications, and even a glimpse into the future of this game-changing technology. But we're not done yet. We still have some key takeaways to go over, and of course, a thought-provoking question to leave you with.
It's been a wild ride. What really stands out to me about this research is that it gives us a practical roadmap to find and optimize nanofiltration across so many different industries.
Like they've given us a treasure map. But instead of leading to buried gold, it leads to a more sustainable future.
That's a perfect way to put it. They've taken experimental data and combined it with the power of machine learning to create this framework that lets us explore this huge chemical space and pinpoint exactly where nanofiltration can have the biggest impact.
So we're not just relying on trial and error anymore, or stumbling upon lucky discoveries,
right?
We have a more systematic and efficient way to harness the power of nanofiltration.
Exactly. And that's what makes this so exciting. This research could really speed up the adoption of nanofiltration in all sorts of sectors. And that means big environmental and economic benefits.
It's like opening a door to a whole new world of possibilities. But before we send you off, dear listener, on your own nanofiltration-inspired adventures, I think it's time for the big question.
The so what question, right? Why should anyone listening care about all of this?
Exactly. We've explored the science, we've seen the potential, but how does this connect to everyday life?
Well, think about the products you use every day. Your clothes, your electronics, all of it. So many of these things rely on complex chemical processes, and nanofiltration has the potential to make those processes way cleaner and more efficient.
So it's not just about making niche products or specialized materials. It's about changing how we manufacture everyday things, making them more sustainable from the very beginning.
Oh, exactly. And for you, the listener, this means having access to products that are not only high quality, but also produced with a smaller environmental footprint. It's about making choices that match your values.
It's about voting with your wallet and supporting companies that are committed to sustainability.
Exactly. And this research gives you the power to make those informed choices. But of course, I have one last thought-provoking question for you. This research focused mostly on industrial applications for nanofiltration, but it got me thinking about other areas where this technology could make a difference.
Oh, all ears. What other areas come to mind?
What about water purification? Could we use nanofiltration to create more efficient and sustainable water treatment systems, especially in places where water is scarce? Or how about healthcare? Could we use it for drug delivery? Or even filtering toxins from the blood?
Those are great questions. It sounds like nanofiltration could go way beyond industrial uses. It could be a key part of solving some of the biggest challenges we face, like access to clean water and better health.
It's a super exciting area of research, and I encourage everyone listening to learn more about nanofiltration and explore what it can do. The researchers actually made their NF10K dataset and some interactive tools available online. Anyone can use them.
That's fantastic. Where can our listeners find those resources?
They're at www.osn-database.com. It's a great resource for anyone who wants to learn more about this amazing technology.
We'll make sure to include that link in the show notes. Well, that brings us to the end of our nanofiltration deep dive. We hope you've enjoyed this journey into the worlds of molecular separations and their potential to create a greener and more sustainable future. We'd love to hear what you think of this episode and any questions you have.
And be sure to join us next time for another deep dive into cutting-edge science and its impact on the world.
Until then, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.